Rosicrucian and Masonic Origins 443. Dream in peace, when the wise should lead and the simple follow, yet all dwell together in fraternity and industry. During this period several books were in circulation, which, to a certain degree registered the pulse of the time. One of these documents, More's Utopia, was the picture of a new age when heavenly conditions should prevail upon the earth. This ideal of establishing good in the world savored of blasphemy, for in that day it was assumed that heaven alone could be good. Men did not seek to establish heavenly conditions upon earth, but rather earthly conditions in heaven. According to popular concept, the more the individual suffered the torments of the damned upon earth, the more he would enjoy the blessedness in heaven. Life was a period of chastisement, and earthly happiness an unattainable mirage. More's Utopia thus came as a definite blow to autocratic pretensions and attitudes, giving impulse to the material emphasis which was to follow in succeeding centuries. Another prominent figure of this period was Sir Walter Raleigh, who paid with his life for high treason against the crown. Raleigh was tried, and though the charge was never proved, he was executed. Before he went to trial, it was known that he must die, and that no defense could save him. His treason against the crown was of a character very different, however, from that which history records. Raleigh was a member of a secret society, or body of men, which was already moving irresistibly forward under the banner of democracy. And for that affiliation he died a felon's death. The actual reason for his death sentence was his refusal to reveal the identity of that great political organization of which he was a member, or his confreres who were fighting the dogma of faith and the divine right of kings. On the title page of the first edition of Raleigh's History of the World, we accordingly find a mass of intricate emblems framed between two great columns. When the executioner sealed his lips forever, Raleigh's silence, while it added to the discomfiture of his persecutors, assured the safety of his colleagues. 444 LECTURESONANCIENTPHILOSOPHY. One of the truly great minds of that secret fraternity, in fact, the moving spirit of the whole enterprise, was Sir Francis Bacon, whose prophecy of the coming age forms the theme in his New Atlantis, and whose vision of the reformation of knowledge finds expression in the Novum Organum. In the engraving at the beginning of the latter volume may be seen the little ship of progressivism sailing out between the pillars of Galenic and Avicennian philosophy, venturing forth beyond the imaginary pillars of church and state upon the unknown sea of human liberty. It is significant that Bacon was appointed by the British Crown to protect its interests in the new American colonies beyond the sea. We find him writing of this new land, dreaming of the day when a new world and a new government of the philosophic elect should be established there, and scheming to consummate that end when the right time came. Upon the title page of the 1640 edition of Bacon's Advancement of Learning is a Latin motto to the effect that he was the third great mind since Plato. Bacon was a member of the same group to which Sir Walter Raleigh belonged, but Bacon's position as Lord Chancellor protected him from Raleigh's fate. Every effort was made, however, to humiliate and discredit him. At last, in the 66th year of his life, he completed the work which held him in England. He feigned death and passed over into Germany, there to guide the tinies of his philosophic and political fraternity for nearly 25 years before his actual demise. Other notable characters of the period are Montaigne, Ben Jonson, Marlowe, and the great Franz Joseph of Transylvania. the latter one of the most important as well as active figures. In all this drama, a man who ceased fighting Austria and retired to a monastery in Transylvania from where he directed the activities of his secret society. One political upheaval followed another. The grand climax culminated in the French Revolution, which was directly precipitated by the attacks upon the person of Alessandro Cagliostro, the divine Cagliostro, by far the most picturesque character of the time, has the distinction of being more maligned than any other person of history. Tried by the Inquisition for founding a Masonic lodge in the city of Rome, he was sentenced to die. A sentence later commuted by the Pope to life imprisonment in the old castle of San Leo. Shortly after his incarceration, Cagliostro disappeared, and the story was circulated that he had been strangled in an attempt to escape from prison. In reality, he was liberated and returned to his masters in the East. But Cagliostro, the idol of France, surnamed the father of the poor, who never received anything from anyone and gave everything to everyone, was most adequately revenged. Though the people little understood this inexhaustible pitcher of bounty which poured forth benefits and never required replenishment, they remembered him in the day of their power. Cagliostro founded the Egyptian rite of Freemasonry, which received into its mysteries many of the French nobility and was regarded favorably by the most learned minds of Europe. Having established the Egyptian rite, Cagliostro declared himself to be an agent of the Order of the Knights Templars, and to have received initiation from them on the Isle of Malta. See Morals and Dogma, in which Albert Pike quotes Eliphas Levi on Cagliostro's affiliation with the Templars. Called upon the carpet by the Supreme Council of France, it was demanded of Cagliostro that he prove by what authority he had founded a Masonic lodge in Paris, independent of the Grand Orient. Of such surpassing mentality was Cagliostro that the Supreme Council found it difficult to secure an advocate qualified to discuss with him philosophic masonry and the ancient mysteries he claimed to represent. Court de Gobelin, the greatest Egyptologist of his day and an authority on ancient philosophies, was chosen as the outstanding scholar. A time was set and the brethren convened. Attired in an oriental coat and a pair of violet-colored breeches, Cagliostro was hailed before this council of his peers. Court de Gobelin asked three questions and then sat down, admitting him self-disqualified to interrogate a man so much his superior in every branch of learning. Cagliostro then took the floor, revealing to the assembled Masons not only his personal qualifications, but prophesying the future of France. He foretold the fall of the French throne, the Reign of Terror, and the fall of the Bastille. At a later time he revealed the dates of the death of Marie Antoinette and the king, and also the advent of Napoleon. Having finished his address, he made a spectacular exit, leaving the French Masonic Lodge in consternation and utterly incapable of coping with the profundity of his reasoning. Though no longer regarded as a ritual in free masonry, the Egyptian rite is available, and all who read it will recognize its author to have been no more a charlatan than was Plato. Then appears that charming first American gentleman, Dr. Benjamin Franklin, who together with the Marquis de Lafayette, played an important role in this drama of empires. While in France, Dr. Franklin was privileged to receive definite esoteric instruction. It is noteworthy that he was the first in America to reprint Anderson's Constitutions of the Freemasons, which is a most prized work on the subject, though its accuracy is disputed. Through all this stormy period, these impressive figures come and go, part of a definite organization of political and religious thought, a functioning body of philosophers repra. Centered in Spain by no less an individual than Cervantes, in France by Cagliostro and St. Germain, in Germany by Gestel and Andrea, in England by Bacon, Moore, and Raleigh, and in America by Washington and Franklin. Coincident with the Baconian agitation in England, the Fama Fraternitatis and Confessio Fraternitatis appeared in Germany, both of these works being contributions to the establishment of a philosophic government upon the earth. One of the outstanding links between the Rosicrucian mysteries of the Middle Ages and modern Masonry is Elias Ashmole, the historian of the Order of the Garter and the first Englishman to compile the alchemical writings of the English chemists. The foregoing may seem to be a useless recital of inanities, but its purpose is to impress upon the reader's mind the philosophical and political situation in Europe at the time of Di 446 LECTURESONANCIENTPHILOSOPHY. Inception of the Masonic Order. A philosophic clan, as it were, which had moved across the face of Europe under such names as the Illuminati and the Rosicrucians, had undermined in a subtle manner the entire structure of regal and sacerdotal supremacy. The founders of Freemasonry were all men who were more or less identified with the progressive tendencies of their day. Mystics, philosophers, and alchemists were all bound together with a secret tie, and dedicated to the emancipation of humanity from ignorance and oppression. In my researches among ancient books and manuscripts, I have pieced together a little story of probabilities which has a direct bearing upon the subject. Long before the establishment of Freemasonry as a fraternity, a group of mystics founded in Europe what was called the Society of Unknown Philosophers. Prominent among the profound thinkers who formed the membership of this society were the alchemists, who were engaged in transmuting the political and religious base metal of Europe into ethical and spiritual gold, the Kabbalists, who as investigators of the superior orders of nature sought to discover a stable foundation for human government, and lastly the astrologers who, from a study of the precession of the heavenly bodies, hoped to find therein the rational archetype for all mundane procedure. Here and there is to be found a character who contacted this society. By some it is believed that both Martin Luther and that great mystic, Philip Melanchthon, were connected with it. The first edition of the King James Bible, which was edited by Francis Bacon and prepared under Masonic supervision, bears more Masons' marks than the Cathedral of Strasbourg. The same is true respecting the Masonic symbolism found in the first English edition of Flavius Josephus' The Antiquities of the Jews. For some time the Society of Unknown Philosophers moved extraneous to the Church. Among the fathers of the Church, however, were a great number of scholarly and intelligent men who were keenly interested in philosophy and ethics, prominent among them being the German Jesuit Athanasius Kircher, who is recognized as one of the great scholars of his day.